Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight. I'm Monty Larrick, joined by David Smith, the Executive Director of the Illinois Family Institute. And we're joined by a couple fellows who were with us last time. They are Andrew Willis.
Hello.
Hello. And John Christoph.
Greetings.
Both these guys are in college, studying to make the world a better place. And I've got a question. I was talking to the president of
Trinity International University in Deerfield.
Dr. David Dockery at the Touchstone Conference just a couple months ago. And one of the things he brought out was that among millennials especially, they are increasingly having no connection with religion whatsoever. It's not that they're against it, but it just has no bearing in their life. What do you think that is, Andrew?
Why, yeah.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is we don't have any time for it. I mean, we're constantly distracted by other things. I mean, I look at my past semester, and it was a struggle, really, to take time to, you know, just get away from my phone and, you know, spend some time in God's Word and prayer. And, you know, I could think if I wasn't raised that way, to, like, you know, being drilled in the Bible and, you know, show how meaningful it has in your life, I would be totally oblivious to it.
Sure.
I mean, you got so much other things to distract you.
Yeah, there are a ton of distractions out there.
There's tweets to be seen.
And, you know, the studies say Illinois, only 40-some percent of Illinoisans go to church regularly. You know, so the vast majority of the culture doesn't. And if you're brought up in a home that doesn't emphasize church or only emphasizes it at Christmas and Easter, then it's not going to take a big part of your life, is it?
And Andrew, you mentioned it was drilled into you. And boy, you know,
indoctrinated.
We can't do that to their kids. They must have their own choices and make their own choices. But in your household, what was the procedure? What happened in your household?
Oh, it was pretty much brainwashing, but you know. You know, like I always say, you know, everyone
call it abuse.
Everyone is brainwashed. It just depends on what kind of soap we're using. You know, it's and
all right then.
There you go.
Yeah, that was probably bad. But. Oh, okay. I was raised in a very much a Christian household, and you know, my parents, they really truly walk the walk, and it really influenced me in very.
And you're glad about that now.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
So Bible, I was always Bible reading, devotions emphasized, going to church
morning
right
and
early.
Night.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. John, what about you?
I mean, I also was raised in a house that was very intent on bringing me up in the ways of Christ, walking the walk that Christ walked. And I'm very grateful for that. And it is very funny to me to hear, like, this whole we need to let children choose for themselves thing, because, like, as if children can put themselves in a vacuum and decide objectively what they want to do with their lives. There's a Christian philosopher, and if any of my friends are listening to the show, they're going to laugh that I'm bringing this up. James K.A. Smith has written some very helpful things on this subject about Christian education, noting that Christian education is not just about putting ideas into your head, or education in general is not just about putting ideas into your head. That is only a small part of who we are as people. We're habitual creatures. We love different things. And so with, you know, education and parenting and things like this, it's not just a matter of I want my children to believe a very specific thing about how the world works. It's also training them to love the things that God loves. And because there are so many distractions going on right now, and because the church, so many churches are not that different from the world, you know, religion is just another choice. Are you going to go to church or not? Nope, I'm going to sleep in today. And those choices make a difference over time. And I think we're seeing the results of that now, where kids are ambivalent to church, and not, and few of them are against or for it. It's just another option.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the problems, one of the grievances I have with the local – the church culture today, it seems to enable parents to neglect their responsibility to teach their children the spiritual three squares a day, okay?
Yeah.
Deuteronomy 6 tells us that we're supposed to, the parents, impress upon the hearts of our children throughout the day the truths of God, a love of God. But yet today we have a lot of parents who think, well, the church is the expert. I'm going to drop my kids off at youth group, Sunday school, whatever, and children's church, and let the quote-unquote experts teach my children instead of modeling it or instilling it in them themselves. And the point I like to make is this. The church is there as a supplement to what you're doing at home. If you're not doing it at home, they're going to be spiritually facing malnutrition by only getting the supplements at church. They're not enough, and especially as you point out, John, a lot of what churches are doing today are no more than self-help, feel-good, entertainment-type programs rather than the hard work of discipleship, which, of course, needs to be done in the home.
Yeah, and I also add that the true definition of the church is the body of believers. And so technically, when I go home with my family to have dinner, we're having church.
Yeah.
And communion.
And communion in a way. Well, I don't know.
Well, fellowship. No emails to me. No.
We're getting a little doctrinal here. Yeah,
no. I was going to say, all right, we know what the topic is for the rest of our show. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that Dr. Dockery told me was the fact that maybe the way to reach people of your generation is to, instead of giving this self-help type of gospel, to go back. To move forward, you have to go back and talk about doctrine. Why do we believe that it's wrong to abort a baby?
Right.
Why do we believe that marriage is reserved between a man and a woman? That sort of thing. What do you think?
I mean, I think that is incredibly important when you're talking to millennials in a large way because of what I said before. If the church is going to reach people and say, we know Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life, you need to look different in a lot of ways. You don't need to put yourself entirely away from culture. I mean, at no part in church history has that happened, but you do need to be very distinct. And so don't assume that children, and even as they're growing into their teen years and such, know the ins and outs of why abortion is wrong or in a situation of when you're talking about quote-unquote civil rights and same-sex marriage and things like that, don't assume that the kids know how to balance understanding Levitical law and reconciling that with New Testament law and the overall principles of the faith and how it all applies to politics. No, some of that requires some thinking. Some of that requires some conversation.
That's right.
Kids aren't going to just figure that out. So, you know, this isn't just for parents. This is just for anyone who wants to have influence on young people growing up, realize that they're going to need some discipleship.
Yeah, and I think one thing that really kind of instilled this love for learning about theology and God and just about my faith in general is that early on, people gave me the respect to let me deal with the tough issues. They didn't try watering things down. They won't let me wrestle with it and let my opinions be known early and listen to my opinions early and gave me a good dose of confidence. And realize, you know, I can do this for myself. I can learn on my own. I can develop my relationship with God. I don't have to rely on, you know, a youth pastor on my by myself.
Good.
I can, give them the respect that
now, they can wrestle with it. One of the things that, you know, I am, especially as I grow older, I look and just see how good God is and how patient He has been with me as I have slowly learned at His feet, and I'm so glad He has not poured it all out on me at once, saying this is everything you need to know and everything you're wrong at and everything that you need to correct. It's been a slow process, and I am exceedingly glad for that. And while I may have different expectations for my kids, certainly want them a little faster, I'm hoping they'll stand on our shoulders, right, and go farther and further and faster than we ever did.
We need to take a little break here, and we'll continue our discussion with John and Andrew in just a moment.
Hi, this is Kurt Jarrus, the host of Veracity Hill. Veracity Hill is a radio podcast dedicated to striving for truth on faith, politics, and society. I don't have all the answers, but join me as I explore important topics with guests from respective fields. To learn more, text the word VERACITY to 555-888. That's VERACITY to the number 555-888, or check out our website at veracityhill.com.
Defending Christianity, religious liberty, legislating morality. Join renowned speaker and award-winning author Dr. Frank Turek for his biblical insights on today's issues at the Illinois Family Institute Worldview Conference, Saturday, February 18th at the Village Church of Barrington.
If you want to be in government, only atheists can be in government. Does it say that anywhere? No.
The Illinois Family Institute Worldview Conference.
Pastors were not called to be tax exempt. We were called to be salt and light.
Tickets for the IFI Worldview Conference are $20 per person and just $50 per family. Student scholarships are available. Seating is limited, so please register at illinoisfamily.org or call the IFI office 708-781-9328. illinoisfamily.org or call 708-781-9328.
People are talking a lot about healthcare these days. There are so many changes, so many questions. As Christians, where can we turn for answers? At Samaritan Ministries, we believe the answer is in Jesus Christ, working in the lives of His people, demonstrating Christian community by sharing each other's medical needs, scripturally, faithfully. Here's just part of Brett's story in his own words.
When I reflect on Samaritan Ministries, the biggest thing that stands out to me is that we, as a body of believers, are living out New Testament Christianity. This idea that Samaritan has adopted from the book of Acts should permeate all parts of our lives, not just health sharing. It has a profound impact on people like me and my wife.
Brett is just one of over 200,000 members who are sharing over $23 million in medical needs each month. If you'd like to experience what it's like to partner with other Christians for your healthcare needs, and you'd like to see what other members are saying, visit MySamaritanStory.org.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight, and David Smith, our executive director of the Illinois Family Institute, with us, along with Andrew Willis and John Christoph. Both young men in college right now, and they have ties to the Illinois Family Institute. I guess we've been talking about millennials and what they believe and what they don't believe, but how do we reach them with the gospel message?
Twitter.
Not Twitter.
Well, only somebody emojis. In law school can put that in 140 characters.
It can't be done.
It can't be done.
So that actually does bring up an important thing, is that in order to reach people in our generation, it's not just going to be stating your opinions at them, because they can get all sorts of opinions at the push of a button from their phones, from their laptops, and things like that. What you need to make sure is that your message isn't just in another opinion, that you yourself are different and something that they are worth seeking. Not that you're perfect, not that suffering doesn't happen to you, but you have a profoundly different way of dealing with suffering and imperfections than they do, things like that. That's going to be putting yourself aside. That's what makes you a city on a hill. As far as what you have differently from them, as far as like the political side of things go, that is going to be a matter of understanding who millennials are, which I feel like our last show talked about quite a bit. Understanding that millennials today have very little background in politics, that to them, government is about people in charge and not about policies that occur. So, which means the first step to kind of telling millennials why you are a conservative and why they should be a conservative is instructing them on, through a relationship, instructing them on the basics of how policy works, that you can't legislate certain things, other things you can legislate, because to millennials who are not familiar with politics, government can be the answer to all. And so they kind of need to be told, well, there are some unintended consequences of that and things like that.
Yeah, and I don't know, I think for policy, at least just a basic messaging point that always kind of had a little nick with me was that we're always about trying to return to the glory days, at least from the conservative base.
Make America great again,
as if so, you know, we're trying to return to a certain point of greatness, wherever that was, probably Reagan.
Absolutely.
Of course.
I say that tongue-in-cheek. It was really Lincoln. No, I mean...
Yes.
Wow. Let's bring it back to
George Washington.
Antebellum.
Okay. I know. That's exactly it. It's just
That's exactly it. What are we even talking about? Make America like what?
And millennials look back because they didn't grow up in those days. And those weren't always so great. I mean, we had some serious issues back pretty much at every point in our history. Yeah. You know,
we still have lots of issues. For us, Illinois family, the life issue is paramount, right? You know, the right to life. Here in Illinois, we slaughter 40,000 unborn babies a year because it's legal to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How do we reach people with the pro-life message? How do we reach people with the religious liberty message? How do we reach people with the message on sobriety and gambling and these things? These are so important. And I know with millennials that life experiences will change them and many of them. But at the same time, I'm interested with this organization changing hearts and minds with the truth. You know, that's my goal. So, your insights.
So, the first thing that comes to my mind with that type of question is millennials need to figure out what it means to have a right to something. Right, the language of rights is relatively new in kind of like the global history of politics discussion, but we say it all the time now.
Yes.
I have the right to like whom I like, and I have the right to my body and things like that. And we don't seem to understand that when you only have the language of rights, you wind up getting into all sorts of messes. Because rights can conflict with each other a lot.
That's right.
So, for example, you can claim a right to your body and your life and things like that, but how does that conflict with the right of a life of an unborn child? And I was reading this recently. It seems that we're getting to a point with the life issue specifically where we're not even concerned whether or not the unborn child is a person. We're just trying to decide whether they're sacred enough to not kill, and which is very saddening to me. But we need to get to at a point where millennials are able to recognize, wow, I have a quote-unquote right to something because the law says I do, but maybe there's more to life than me exercising my rights. Maybe my life has a purpose beyond me doing what I want to do and not preventing other people from doing what they want to do.
Sure.
Something beyond rights and personal expression.
The right to buy a cake or the right not to bake the cake.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Right. Dignitary rights, that's what they're calling it now. This is interesting. I mean, you know, I try to think where millennials have gotten the vast majority of their knowledge and, you know, part of it, you know, part of our problem is that millennials are getting most of their facts from Comedy Central.
Oh, boy.
I mean.
BuzzFeed.
John Oliver. I mean, the thing about John Oliver, he always sounds so intelligent until you know something about the topic and then you realize he's just construing the facts just to make the best, I don't know.
Right. And, yeah, you know, he's doing funny. That with everything.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Right.
Definitely.
So we're getting a lot of our information from Hollywood, would you say? Or, I mean, would you put that Comedy Central in Hollywood category or not? Because it's entertainment.
I don't watch it
certainly
enough
isn't.
To know where it's at.
We do tend to trust celebrities a lot with the celebrities we like. We just tend to like their opinions more. It's a weird phenomenon.
Tim Tebow in my case.
What you hear from pro-life organizations, they will tell you that more and more young people are pro-life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You go to the March for Life in Chicago. And
January 17th, 15th.
The majority of the people are young people out there. Mm. Is it your experience, from your perspective, are you seeing that the life issue is turning in favor of life among young people?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think part of it is that the pro-life movement has done such a great job in making it a very positive, caring, loving message. And, you know, as we talked about last episode, millennials are very compassionate in their own sense of the word. They care very much about loving others. You know, whether what love really means or not is a whole different question.
Yeah, but that's the number one value.
Yes, yes. And they've created where, you know, you are rescuing somebody, which it really is. You're rescuing unborn lives. And, you know,
how do we
really
convey
resonated.
That message, mm-hmm. though, when it comes on the issue of same-sex marriage and homosexuality?
You identify. You know, here, let me just jump in real quick. I was reading an article by Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, who lived many years as a lesbian activist, and she was giving her testimony in front of a large group. And at the end of it, a woman came up, an older woman, 75 years old, and it said to her, "Why didn't anybody tell me this earlier? I've built my whole life on my homosexuality, and now I've given my life to Christ, and I've got so much now to sacrifice. If I knew this earlier, I wouldn't have built this life and have to sacrifice." And so my point is this: the love and the compassion that we have for people can't be just an emotional response.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It has to be an intellectual response, intellectually understanding. The loving message is to help you avoid all that pain. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. It's a very positive message. That's what the traditional – I don't know.
But that's certainly not what the left says it
is. I know. That's the problem. I mean, is they've stolen our weapons of love and compassion.
Right.
And, you know, promoting a message that you're not bound by your sexual identity, or that's not truly what defines you, and it's not a permanent.
They've redefined it. What their message, they say, is love, and our message is – hate.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And if, you know, like, part of our messaging is traditional. Like, the only reason why we think same-sex marriage is wrong is because it's not traditional. And that's the part of the problem.
Yeah. And so that's the matter of when you're conveying your message to a millennial, you have to make sure that the rhetoric you're using is not about you wanting what you want. To make sure that it is not like, you know, a parent telling their child, "You have to do this," not for the child's good, but because it makes the parent more comfortable. If you use that rhetoric, then most millennials will shut down.
Use an example. Broccoli.
Yeah.
to a child, you have to eat your broccoli.
So there's the example of, like, you know, why aren't you eating your broccoli? When I was a kid, I loved broccoli, and you know, when or something like, you know, whenever my mom, you know, made me this special dish, I ate it all because I knew that she would feel bad if I didn't eat it all, or something like that. Almost like this pushing the child to want what you want.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Manipulate. That's,
so millennials can feel that way a lot, especially when Donald Trump right now is the face of quote-unquote conservatism to a lot of millennials.
Help us, please, no.
Again, a lot of this is down to information, because millennials are very new to the political discussion.
Sure.
If Donald Trump is the face of conservatism, if the illegal immigration issue just comes down to, "I don't want Mexicans taking my jobs," they're not going to listen to any conversation about, okay, we need to have these certain precautions. They're not going to listen to that at all, because as far as they're concerned, you just don't want Mexicans in your town.
Because mm-hmm. you're a bigot.
Right.
Yep.
And or if you talk about, you know, same-sex marriage, or even like this cake issue, if you talk about it as like, "Well, I shouldn't have to make a cake if I don't want to make a cake," then if that's all you're saying, then what most millennials are going to hear is, you just don't want to have your views challenged, or you don't want to step outside your comfort zone. That's what they hear. And if that's all they hear, they're not going to listen to anything else you say. Okay. So you have to make sure that in your conversations with them that you need to be, like, you know, respectful, and besides being respectful and relate and intentionally relational, because millennials are very attuned to that, you need to make sure that your rhetoric is about how these policies ultimately improve people's lives overall. Because if you don't focus on that, they won't listen.
Good. Andrew, you wanted to say something.
I mean, here's one of the things that really kills proponents of traditional marriage, is that we're willing to compromise. And millennials are naturally idealistic. I think all young people were at some point in their life. And they can sniff out hypocrisy, like, super easy. And so when, you know, we're willing to tolerate a man like Donald Trump, who is, you know, bragged about his sexual immoralities, has had multiple marriages and stuff like that. If we can't even respect traditional marriage and what it truly is, how do we expect people to be against same-sex marriage if we're not even willing to tolerate it amongst our own circles?
Good point.
And I know we're running out of time, but I do want to jump on that, because I do think this was a huge problem with conservatives' image. When the audio of Donald Trump saying the demeaning things about women came out, conservatives, I felt, needed to come out and condemn Donald Trump for those things. We've spent a long time talking about how we don't want these transgender laws. We don't want them to allow men in women's restrooms and things like that, because we can't have that. We want to protect each other. But we won't condemn Donald Trump for saying these horrific things because we're afraid, oh, if we say these things, Hillary Clinton might become president. If we condemn Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton might be president. That is the fear of man.
Yeah.
You know, conservatives can fear that as well. So I feel like that was a missed opportunity. And I think there were a number of millennials who picked up on that as well and were disappointed. So thank you, Andrew, for pointing that out, because I think that was a huge issue.
Oh, it's a valid point. Absolutely. Something that we have to deal with. Going forward, Donald Trump is our president, will be the president, and he has a checkered past, to say the best.
Oh, my goodness.
But we can hope and pray as Christians, just as we were to pray for Barack Obama, and hopefully we still do. You know, we knew him at our Illinois Family Institute as a state senator, and how radical he was. In fact, we did a podcast with Jill Stanek recently, how he voted four times against the infant born alive ban.
Yeah.
So we need to pray, you know, for these men, for these politicians, for these elected officials, and just pray that God surrounds them with good counsel, good people, and changes their hearts.
Yep.
Well, as we close this one out, let me just read Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 through 7, because, I mean, it's actually apropos for discussing our problems with our government and our leaders. One day we will have a perfect leader. Well, he is.
We already do.
Sorry, go ahead.
He's coming back.
Right, exactly. So Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 through 7. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end. Let's just leave it there.
Good stuff.
It's good.
Right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks, for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.